views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
September 23rd, 2015, and it is our Women's Wednesday, and so we are talking all things women, but we don't exclude the men. We love our brothers. We're talking about a united front between the brothers and the sisters here. No separation. We love you, brothers. I know I love my Black brothers. I love them, love them. So tonight we are going to welcome in to the Lotus Place a special guest, Dr. Vivian Anderson. She will join us shortly, and she's a whistleblower.
And listeners, we got disconnected from our call, so bear with us as we try to get reconnected.
This service is access code accepted. This conference is being recorded. Q&A session started.
Black communities. And so you wonder, why aren't you getting well? Why do you still have high blood pressure? Why do you still have diabetes and all of this? A lot of the medication was outdated, like, for instance, outdated Cokes and things like that. Just outdated food, period, that they sell in the Black communities. I remember when I was in Miami, went to visit some of my family, moved to Miami for about a year or so, and my family stayed in these housing projects called the Browns. In Miami, you have the Browns, you have, the Beans, and it's not that, another house. But anyway, the nearest little neighborhood store, of course, was walking distance, and everybody in the Browns would walk over to their store. And so, I was with my family, we went into the store, and a friend of mine that helped me drive to Miami was with me, and when we walked in the store, we both were like, damn, because of the pungent odor, but everybody else, it was just like normal. They just walked in, shopping and everything. But the smell of just pure funk, dead something, just horrible, just the worst, one of the worst. It smelled like a sewage or something in there. Anyway, but the point I'm trying to make is because that was a store that primarily had patrons coming from the housing project, they serve this old meat in the butcher area. This meat was clearly old and poor. We could not believe it. But this is what happens in our communities. And so our guest is going to come in and speak about the redlining. Of course, quite often people, I've heard some Anglo-Saxons say, well, you know, Black people, they just want to live in the projects. No, not that we just want to live in the projects. That was systematic. That was a systematic plan to shove us all into these buildings, and it was a project, thus the name project. And so this was by design. And I love to hear people that actually can delineate how this happened. So let's see. Let me try to get our guest on, and I will play So Women's Wednesday, I want to play this rare Malcolm lecture, whereas he's speaking to women in terms of how they should react and respond and care for their man, their counterpart. All right, rare Malcolm.
Once your work is finished, don't watch the television. Once your work is finished, find something constructive to add to your mind. Have an hour for reading. And I don't mean read comic books. Read something that will make you know what's happening. So when you get in the conversation, you can sound intelligent, even if you aren't. Do you hear me what I'm saying? Why, what kind of man want a wife today who can't hold a conversation? No, don't a man want to sit up and talk to you about Davy or about Johnny needs some shoes? Your husband don't even want to hear that. One of the reasons you have trouble in your house is you can't hear it in an adult conversation. When your husband was dead, you talked trash. That's all you talk trash. Now he come out, he's a Muslim. He want to talk about Yaqub. He want to talk about the sun, moon, and stars. He want to talk about cracking atoms. Even if you don't know what he's talking about, that's what he want to talk about. I'm telling you this so you won't lose your husband. All of you will agree that your husband is more serious once he became a Muslim than he was when he was a Christian. He's serious. Now, you can't hold no man down like you used to, talking some trash about sister so-and-so. And I'm telling you, that was out of man's grave. No, go get a book and read it. And then when he come in the house, start talking to him about something that's going to nourish his mind and nourish your mind. Read your lessons and talk about the lessons. I'm telling you a strange thing. I don't want to get on this subject, but I'm telling you. You've been so far away from this, but if your husband sit reading, studying, he can be reading by you, studying, something serious, you think he's ignoring you. But if he put down his book, and both of y'all sit and watch the TV together, that makes you happy. Why don't you think that he can read with you as easily as watch television with you? I'm going to tell you why. You don't know enough about what he's reading. You don't know enough about what he's interested in, so that when he's doing what he's interested in, you feel left out. But the television is your level. Please forgive me for saying that. But the television is your level. You got a television brain, a television vocabulary, and you live in a television world. Now, as long as your man is spending time with you on your level, you're happy. But when he tries to get you into a world that's based on intellect, that's based on intelligence, that's based on nourishing that brain, you feel left out. And you are left out. I don't make you angry for saying this, do I? But this is good for you, because when you understand that, you know how to get him, and if you got him, you know how to keep him. But if you don't understand it, I'll guarantee you, you won't keep what you got, and you won't get what you got your eyes on. Do you understand that? That's the beginning. That's when you take your first step. But there's more to it than that. What you and I want to do is get organized so not only can we take a step, we can dance a little bit. You understand? See, stepping is all right. Walking is all right. But when you can use those legs, brother, to put down all kinds of action, then you got it made. Do you understand? Very good. A black man, by being the natural man, and in accord with nature, has perfect control over all of his natural ability. He harmonizes it. He blends it. He rhythm, brother. He be wrecking your jaw. Come on, right along. He's different. Oh, that's a sign. All that shows you what you can do when you get in accord with nature, when you get in accord with your own nature, and when you be yourself. Do you understand? Now, whenever a man has to run a race, he has to have perfect control over both legs. Am I right? Whenever a man has to win a battle, he has to have perfect control over both arms, over both fists. Is that right or wrong? What controls his arms? His legs? No. What controls his legs? His arms? No. Neither. His head. The head controls both of them. The head keeps these arms coordinated, and the head keeps the legs coordinated. You must have a head in order to have coordination. You must have a head in order to have rhythm. In fact, you must have a head in order to have even a body, in order to have anything. That's the coordinator. That's the blender. That's the harmonizer. And this is why Allah had to come to America and raise up the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and make him our head. Once the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was placed here as our head, immediately it became his task or mission to coordinate the entire body of 20 million black people here in America. He set up, he has the MGT and the FOI. Left hand, right hand. You don't mind calling left hand. You don't mind being with left hand, do you? Be glad that you're a hand. I'm showing you. I'm listening to you. Some of you all, if I say to you, why he call us left hand? You should be glad to be on the body. Do you hear what I'm saying? Don't never make a... why? That's like saying, why do we have to call us women? You can't be a man. I could, if I call you a man, I'd be wrong. No, you're a woman. He's a man. You're a female. He's a man. Am I right or wrong? You're feminine, and he's masculine. That don't mean he's better than you, and that doesn't mean you're better than he. Same with the left hand and the right hand. If you train the left hand right, it can do the same thing the right hand can. And vice versa. Is that right or wrong? It all depends upon the development of the members of the body, the development of the members of the body is what governs the ability of that particular member. Same with the MGT and the same with the FOI. Same with a sister and the same with a brother. Same with a wife and the same with a husband. The devil, during slavery, destroyed the masculinity or manhood of the so-called Negro. No man. Right now you got to be trained all over again to be a man. So you can't stand up and say to your woman, I'm a man. If you're that, you don't even have to say that. But you look like telling someone you're a man. You make it sound like you're doubtful. That doesn't mean I'm right or wrong. If I had to come in here and tell you that I was a minister, why, good night, you must not know what I am. I'd be ashamed to tell you that. If you didn't know that I was that, I would never say it. Because something would be lacking. Is that right or wrong? Same way with manhood. When you have to tell someone, I'm a man too, why do you think so-called Negro have to tell a white man, I'm a man same as you? Because you're not a man the same as me. No, this man got factory. Banks. That's what make him a man, brother. When you get the same thing, your woman will say, man. You know that? You come up with a bank. Well, your wife will call you a man all the way across the town. You won't never have to tell her you boss. She'll call you boss. Call you daddy and me. Don't never worry about what your brother is thinking about you or what your sister is thinking about you. You worry about what Allah knows about you. See, Allah don't have to think about it. Allah knows. Allah knows your heartbeat. You know how many times your heart will beat from the day you're born to the day you die. Allah look at you right now and know exactly how many times your heart will beat. I believe you got some scientists in here. And since you all put the sun up in the sky, we want you to straighten out this light. That's what I mean when I say, when brothers come to me asking me way out questions, you may get indignant because I give you an answer to get you off of that. But I'm doing you a favor. You have got no business in your right mind intelligently worrying about something way out, and you yet haven't mastered this right here. Do you understand? I may hurt your feelings if you come to me with some of those way out questions. But I'm doing you a favor. I'm giving you justice. I'm bringing you back down to earth. I'm putting your foot on the feet on the ground. I'm giving you a, what you call it, an area, or a ground, grounding you. Because you got no business being way out and way in here at the same time. Do you understand? All praise is due to Allah.
Ooh, that was Brother Malcolm. That was one of his rare speeches on women, but he covered some other topics as well. I loved what he says about, and I know Delta, who just joined us, can appreciate what he said about when a man gets from a bank or gets him something going on, then a woman will call him a man, and there won't be any kind of ambiguity about that, and she'll even call him daddy. I said, well, I know that's right, because I know you got your papa. That's what I'm going to call my husband when I get him. Papa. I'm going to say, yeah, papa, 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 don't preach. Ooh, papa. Big papa. That's what I'm going to call him. Big papa. How you doing, Delta?
Fine. Big papa sounds cute.
Yes.
Thanks, you too. How everybody doing tonight?
Oh, just wonderful. Let me see. Our guest was trying to call in. Delta, can you give us some hot topics? Because I haven't even caught up with the news. And let me, our guest is having a little difficulty calling in. So if you could just give us some hot topics while
I sure can. Now, we know about the shooting, and I can't call the young baby that got killed. What was his name? Tamir Wright.
Yeah.
They have, you know, they shot him back in. It's been over almost a year now, maybe a year. And the lady secretly, the one, the 911 operator, when they call in, she secretly resigned. And she resigned back here in July. Now they gonna let her resign. Yeah, they just released that today. That she secretly resigned back in July.
Interesting, because I know a group of brothers had come together, and some of them were pastors, and they filed like a citizen's arrest for their crazy cop. Dude never should have been on the force there at that particular department because he had already been deemed unfit. You know, that's ridiculous. You shoot this baby within 2 seconds. If he had been in whatever, and I'm not too familiar with that area, but if it had been some affluent white area, he never would have pulled out that gun. He would have been, how you doing, buddy? Is everything okay? You know, and all that kind of stuff. But, you know,
well, we know
that part. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm sorry, go ahead, because you made me thought of something. She a real good when you said, how they, like, if they'd have went to that affluence neighborhood, how they would treat them. But I'm going to give you a perfect example. You just made something click. Look how they did Dylan Roof. When he done killed 9 people, when they picked him up, they took him by Burger King and got him something to eat.
Absolutely.
So he was human enough to get something to eat. Where the black man is not human enough to get nothing. He is to be made to be shot down like a dog.
Like an animal.
That is correct.
Like sitting on impact tonight.
You absolutely correct. It just don't make any sense. And see, and that's another thing. Sean Penn is another hot topic. Filed a $10 million lawsuit against, it just slipped my mind. The man that's director of Empire, Lee Daniels. He, Sean Penn, just filed a $10 million lawsuit against Lee Daniels. Because he's saying Lee Daniels made a statement in which Wendy Williams said today on her show, it is a true statement. Lee Daniels made a statement that Sean Penn, they trying to say the young black boy, the light skinned Terrence Howard, is the one said that he got domestic charges on him. And they trying to, the show number one, now they trying to bring something to bring the show down and start up something with him. and trying to say he's a woman abuser.
Oh, please. Sean Penn, who used to be one of Madonna's boy toys, I believe he was a drug addict too. Please, let me finish the story, girl, and you're absolutely correct.
That's what Wendy was saying. She was saying
Delta, Dr. Vivian, I want to welcome you in. We're just going through our hot topics. This is Delta. Delta, this is Dr. Vivian, our guest tonight. And she'll be sharing her story with us. So just welcome in, Dr. Vivian. How are you?
I'm just fine. Yourself and all the guests.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm well. I'm well. We're very well. We're just sharing our topics. So we just welcome you in. And then we'll start right after break. Then we'll go right into your story, or maybe right before break. We can at least just get some insight to what you are going to share with us tonight, because you have a very, very interesting story that I'm sure some of our listeners will find that they would like to follow up on and research for themselves, perhaps. We're talking about majority housing discrimination. And I say majority because black and brown, we are majority. We're not minority, but the so-called majority dominant society people discriminate against the so-called minority people in so many ways. And Dr. Vivian is going to share her experience in that area. But Delta, come on, give us this Sean Penn.
Sean Penn, Lee Daniels made a statement because they're coming against Terrence Howard. And because Terrence Howard, he had two charges in his past. And it was years ago when he was really young. Which is no excuse, but I just want people to know it was years ago where he had two charges for, slapping his girlfriend. But anyway, when the Williams pulled some statistics today, and she said Sean Penn has 5 domestic charges, but he said a lead charge, but she said the only difference is, Terrence Howard, his girlfriend pressed charges. The only difference in Sean Penn, he had 5 women come for domestic violence, and it was all hushed and put away. So when the Williams said, really, he don't have a leg to stand on, so they said this morning on Good Morning America, Sean Penn need to be quiet because what happened, he shouldn't have filed that lawsuit, because now what Lee Daniel, all he have to do is go pull in order to fight the lawsuit, he have to prove it. And they said now they'll be able to prove all these charges was filed against him, but they never went anywhere. So you know what? And so Lee Daniel was saying, every time you get a number one show, when black folks start to rising up and doing for themselves, said a white man, always come with a way to try to destroy the man. When somebody turned their life around, because this happened over like, I guess, 20 years ago. And they said when somebody turned their life around, the white man want to go and try to ruin their life. And so that's what Lee Daniel was saying. He was not belittling Sean Penn. He was using Sean Penn's own words from all his wives and his lover. And Madonna alleged.
He was basically stating the truth that Sean Penn, like you said, didn't have a leg to stand on. Because how are you going to try to criticize Terrence Howard for having some domestic abuse charges? But you
Sean Penn didn't try to. Sean Penn didn't try to criticize him. It was somebody else, but Lee Daniel went and pulled domestic abuse from powerful white actors, leading actors.
Oh, okay, so Sean Penn didn't actually make the statement?
That is correct.
Who's trying to sue?
Trying to sue Lee Daniels because Lee Daniels made the statement. that if Terrence Howard was white like Sean Penn, and he named a couple of other ones, well,
oh please, that's public record. Sean Penn
is correct. That's not
right. These people get on my nerves. Anyway, whatever. Sit down, boy. What else? What else you have, Delta?
And then also, there was a young black man, and I forgot where he was at. He was going through a lot of stress, and he had lost his job. And the young man took his kids out, and he tried to kill all three of them. He threw two of them in the river, and the 7-year-old ran and got away. But they said the daddy was going through a hard time. He had lost his job. He was really going through. And he took his kids out. And I guess he figured the only way was out, to kill his family. In his mind, in his rationale, that he was stopping them from suffering.
Okay.
And
do
those are my hot
shots. Because that was so morbid. Can you give us something good to end on? Let me see. Hold on, let me see.
The good news.
Aja, do you have any good news for us? Because oh my God, I want to go jump in the river right now. Good Lord, mercy.
I just want to say that kudos to our black women for making these Emmy Awards this week and making history. Viola Davis is the first African American to win an Emmy for outstanding main character in a drama series. So she won it for
How to Get Away with
Murder. Commit a Murder. How to Commit a Murder. Yes.
How to Get Away with Murder.
How to Get Away, yes. How to Get Away with Murder. And her acceptance speech was astounding. It was just as groundbreaking as what she had accomplished, because she quoted from Harriet Tubman that the only thing that's separating us black women from the white women over there, I think she said it was green grass or something like that. But Viola's statement was the only
she said that when you look across the field and you see the white women across the grassy green knoll and all of that, the only thing that separates the black women of color, she said, women of color from the white women on the other side of that green grassy knoll is just opportunity. So in essence, she stated, opportunity. In essence, she was stating that if you get out of our way, if you leave people alone and let them just, let their creative attributes be nurtured and watered and let a person be free, essentially, just give a person liberty, what we're supposed to have, to be able to create, to be able to dream, to be able to do what it is that you really came here to do, versus slaving on some stupid factory job for them 12 hours a day, and all of this, have to put your children in daycare. If you just let a person be free, if you give them the opportunity, if you give women of color, thespians, those opportunities to have those roles, then they will excel. As you can see,
they will excel.
How much people may not like Scandal, because of what the little side story of her sleeping with whatever the president and all of that stuff. The fact of the matter is, her acting is great. And if that role could have been given to another blonde, skinny, blue-eyed chick. And so I, as an African woman, I'm tired of looking at skinny, blonde, blue-eyed chicks on TV. So I'd rather see Carrie. If I have to suck it in and walk out the room when she kisses the white president, then that's what I may have to do or whatever. But I don't just look at programs just to see whatever all of that stuff. People's minds are so damn perverted. You know, people just, just focus in on the sex part and the gun.
Exactly.
And, you know. All of this
calling her a bad wench. That's so silly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's acting. Give her credit. They're not giving her credit.
Yeah. You know, anyway, that right
there
is just... Sure, of course, President. Oh, well, I'll tell you what, yeah. Right after we come, take us into break. We're going to go to break. If you can make it quick, we just, well,
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For live programming schedules, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All right, and we are back. Just remember, if you would like to have a question stated, or if you have a comment that you would like to say, rather, just press star 6 and 1, and then we'll see you in the queue, and you can keep your mind. So, Brother Brown, you would like to say something, and then we'll welcome in our guest again.
Okay, I'm going to
Hey, Brother Brown, good. How you doing?
Good evening. Good evening to the listeners and all of you. I just want to say something. Hello?
Hi, Brother Brown. I'm just speaking.
Oh, okay.
Thank you. I
just want to say something about the, what y'all were talking about. First of all, we have to understand who owns the industry of Hollywood,
mm-hmm.
which is the Jew.
Yeah.
Okay. And as long as Jews own that whole industry, mm-hmm. they pick and choose who's going to get an Emmy, who's going to get an Oscar, whose picture is going to be what. Okay, so why are we feeding into the nature of trying to understand and be a part of something that was created by somebody who's already a fake? See, we have to start getting real. I really don't care anything about Hollywood.
I don't care anything about it either.
Let me finish my statement.
Yeah, sure. I was just communicating with you.
If we focus on these people who go to that industry, knowing what that industry consists of, knowing who owns that industry, okay, and knowing the ramifications and understanding white supremacy and racism,
mm-hmm.
that's the bottom line. Like Nelly Fuller said so often, many times, and I quote that all the time. If you don't understand white supremacy and racism as a system of global oppression, then everything you think you understand
will confuse you. I know. I mean, I get that, and I understand it.
When we look at the industry of Hollywood, and I just
it's just Hollywood. It is what it is. And these people,
they own it, they control it, and they will continue to control it.
Right. I mean, I get that, and you know, I think everybody on the line pretty much, you know, understands that. It's just, I think that we were just like acknowledging the fact that she did win that award. But I mean, you know, I know what Hollywood is.
She didn't win it.
I'm not even tripping on that. I mean, we know how Hollywood works right now. All of that stuff is a game.
Right.
I mean, that's not the whole major part of it. All of that is Hollywood. Hollywood. I can even go into breaking down the Holly and the Wood part of it, but I'm not even going to do all of that because this is not the time and the place. So, I mean, I get it. I know the whole game and the trickery and the devilment and all of that stuff. So, I mean, you're right, but the point is, people like Kerry Washington, Viola Davis, they have chosen to do that. That's their field. This is what they want to do. Right. If they feel like being awarded by that group of people, is meaningful to them, then good for them. That's them. I don't have anything to do with that, because guess what? None of that is going to help me do what I need to do in terms of taking care of some things like what I need to do here right now and today. But good for them. I'm just like, yo, go girl, Viola Davis. You won an award. It meant a lot to her. But what I liked about it is the statement she made. I'm not even thinking about the award. It was the statement that she made to raise up, as we do on this show, an ancestor, Harriet Tubman.
Yes.
That's the point that we're trying to make here. Damn the award. The point of the matter is she brought up the fact that they continuously discriminate against black women, like the sister that's getting ready to speak now.
All the time.
We constantly scratching and clawing and got to go through hell and hot water and all of this bullshit just to live.
And every time, just to live.
Yeah.
Right. Every time they say something about a black woman, it's negative.
She's the angry black woman, she ugly, she got to wear weaves
and all that. Yes. I want to hear something good, and I was glad to hear something good, something positive.
The fact that Viola Davis, and we're going to welcome in our guests as we get off the subject, but the fact that Viola Davis stood up there with her natural bone kinky hair and raised up an ancestor.
She sure did.
You better know we're going to get that sister some high fives on here tonight. Because she didn't have her long weave. She wasn't talking about no other white woman, Anglo-Saxon woman that did nothing. She raised up Harriet Tubman, one that brought a minute over. We wouldn't be here today had it not been for people like Harriet Tubman, some of us. Because our black ancestors, their ancestors would have died on the fucking plantation. Excuse my language. Some of us wouldn't even be here if Harriet Tubman had not have done that. And the sister brought her name up last night. Speaking of which, Brother Brown, go on and take us into some quick libations to the ancestors since we brought them up. And Dr. Vivian, we are going to definitely bring you right in after this. I couldn't let us not acknowledge, you know, Harriet Tubman, a strong sister that went through some serious battles, and we are still going through them today as black women.
Still today.
It's pitiful.
Still today.
We are still enslaved. We are still enslaved. Brother Brown, you feel like doing some libation for us?
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it, but I just want to say that we are only enslaved in our minds when we make ourselves slaves.
Mm-hmm.
See, because you can't enslave a free spirited person of African descent. See, I can't be a slave.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I may be living in an institution that may be trying to put me into slavery, but I personally can't. I'm not going to accept slavery. Mm-hmm. Because I will fight the elements of white supremacy and racism until I die.
But did you get the point that we were trying to make about Harriet Tubman, though? That's our whole point.
I heard what you said. And like I said, my point was, when we go into these institutions, it's just like if I go into an institution that I already know there's a stack deck dealing with white folks.
But that's not what we're talking about, Brother Brown.
Yeah,
That's why we're talking about that.
That's why I accepted what you said, and I left it alone. Okay. All right. We got our guest waiting. So let's go ahead on and let's, if you don't mind,
Brother Brown, because she only has a little bit of time with us, and I know. Well, you can go ahead and make it after she finishes. You can go ahead and put her on there. Okay. Thank you so much, Brother Brown. Dr. Vivian, welcome in. Welcome into the Lotus Place. How are you?
I'm doing great and highly favored by our Almighty God. I just thank you for the opportunity to be here tonight. And it's such a pleasure to hear dialogue of things going on in our society and in our nation. And some of these things are very, very basically not attentive to, and it appears as if we are regressing. The reason why I say that before I get into my story is that we need to really come together on a united front in order to address issues that are going on in our nation that are not even being brought out into the media. We know that there are a lot of problems in our nation against minorities, but I don't see or hear anyone really bringing a united front or a group of our people coming together and really allowing the torch to keep burning, because although the 1964 Civil Rights Act was signed into a law, it has never really been carried out to its fullest potential. And that, with that, I'll say, because I'm a civil rights activist in the state of Virginia. I'm an advocate for the disabled American veterans. I'm a PhD, philosophy and religion education. I also am a diplomatic healthcare practitioner with the American Integrated Medical Association. But some years ago, I had my own Class A contracting real estate corporation. And I built a great deal of commercial, residential, and churches in the Tidewater and Hampton Roads area. And I saw an opportunity to go out to the actual rural area in our state, the largest area in the state of Pennsylvania County. And within that county, they have multiple counties. One in particular is Martinsville, Virginia. And if you've ever heard of the Martinsville Seven, which means back in the early 50s, they had actually young men in the age of 20s. They hung them in a various spot of Martinsville, Virginia on a lie. And what happened was the white girl that said that they gang raped her, they were actually hung, and the monument stands today there. And out in these counties, the Ku Klux Klan definitely ruled. I lived out there for 3 years. I went out there for the main purpose of actually not only to utilize my skills in construction to build homes, but to bring revenue and jobs. I had gained a great deal of respect throughout the state of Virginia in regards to the things that I was doing. So by going out there, I wanted to contract with the actual state and the federal government to see the disparity that was actually out there. And I don't know if you ever heard of Eastern Shore, Virginia. It was so bad. It was so bad that the people were living basically like you would see in a third world country. These things are being hid, and this is not only in Virginia, one of the 13 original colonies. It's in a lot of our actual southern states. But some of the places people are really coming together and trying to revitalize the areas, because the things that I saw was horrific. And I would share that with, even with my ex-husband when I would come home. We had actually purchased a home on 6 acres of land and I definitely wanted to actually build a health resort out there to have people come in and actually learn how to actually to address various, ailments that we have in our society, like cancer, AIDS, some of the most horrific diseases where the doctors are basically brutalizing people and sending them home to die. But as I was working on my contract, I was asked to become the chairperson of a nonprofit organization. And with that position in Martinsville, Virginia, I had the responsibility of finding out the clients who were qualified for the various services that the government have subsidies set aside for them. But what is so sad is many of these organizations throughout America are not being appropriately monitored appropriately. Because whenever you have nonprofit organizations, there's going to be misappropriations. I became the whistleblower because I had multiple clients come to me to tell me their conditions. But I had to go out and survey it for myself. And what I did, I asked my ex-husband to please take the video footage because that would possibly help my proposal or my contract to even be really accepted because of the need assessment. But lo and behold, once I gathered all the necessary information, I went before the actual executive director of the program who had been there since 72, I'm sorry. The program started in 65. Each year they received more, as much as $5 million or more to actually revitalize and to render the services that need out in the area for rehabbing or whatever the needs are, because usually people out there, they had no facilities for baths to eliminate themselves. They had no water, no electricity. Wintertime, they had nothing to keep them warm. They were like squatters. So I made the video, and I mean, I have now converted into a DVD. And I have shared this video to multiple people. And they just are appalled at what we're doing here in this state. And I hear it all the time. Well, it's all over the nation. It's been going on for such a long time. Yes, okay, if that's true, then what are we doing about it? Why are we allowing our tax dollars to be placed in positions of these programs and no one really benefits from it? So I took the necessary means of exposing the disparity and the poverty in those counties. And I found myself putting myself in a dangerous situation because although I had placed articles in the newspaper, on TV, I assumed that the politicians would pay attention and really come out to assist me. No one did. I began to receive multiple criminal charges lodged against me from the sheriff and the police department. I mean, look, like every day I was receiving a warrant. So it got so bad that I had to seek out an attorney. And I knew that I wasn't going to find an attorney in that area. And to find an attorney to go from as far as Richmond or from Washington, D.C., that was going to cost a substantial amount of money. So I felt the need to just pray and ask God, Lord, you have to help me with this because something is really wrong when the same attitude that has been going on for years, as far back as the plantation mentality or the realization of the plantation, a lot of cover up, even from the state officials and the politicians. But I received an answer. I found out an attorney who contacted me. He was referred by a friend, and he contacted me and asked me to come to his office, and I did. When I got to the office, I saw nothing but Confederacy all over the place, and I said, oh, my God, what if I walked into a setup? But lo and behold, before I could go back out the door, the gentleman came. He was tall, Caucasian, and he wanted to know what did I need. And I said, well, I'm Dr. Anderson. And he said, please come into my office. And once I sat down in his office, he told me, he said, I'm very proud to see the things that you are doing in the counties. We see it on TV. We've seen it in the newspaper. He said, I want to help you. And I asked him point blank, is this a setup? Because things were happening so quickly, I just didn't know who were the ones that I could really trust. So I went on in and told him, and he said, I will take your case, and I will only charge you $200. When if it had been another situation, it could have cost as much as $20,000 to $30,000 to represent me in a court of law in regards to the charges that were against me. So lo and behold, I'll get to the actual trial. It was large. I mean, people were standing on the outside because they had heard about me, but they came out to even see because so many people were suffering. I mean, I have never seen people suffer. I know what poverty is, but I have never seen it the way I saw it in those counties. The people were actually drinking their own waste. We found E. coli in the water, but what could they do? They had been crying out for years. No one was listening. The Department of Housing and Community Services in Richmond, the Secretary of Commerce and Trade, the United States Department of Agriculture, the Commonwealth attorneys, the politicians, the senator, the delegates, the governor, no one saw the need to help these people. And these individuals, they were ignorant. I was so heartbroken to have them come to me and just say, what do I do? I've been doing this for years. And they didn't even know right in the city. Not only did they have a nonprofit organization, they had also the United States Department of Agriculture who had much more money to assist them. So I started having meetings. And when I did, I had the Nation of Islam study group out of Martinsville, Virginia. We walked the street. We had the state police to make sure that we were protected. And I even took video footage of that, and also had newspaper companies to come out because it was a big story. Come to find out that the money was being misused to enhance the rich whites in the counties rather than helping those who really needed the money. So by me exposing it and sending it to the actual state to have them come down and monitor the information that I submitted to them, what they did was cover it up. And when they came into county, they neither came to any of the meetings. They did nothing but wrote in the newspaper that everything was okay. They didn't find any improprieties or anything. And that helped make me understand how corrupt politics and the fact of those who are in responsible positions to do the work that they're supposed to do, they're not doing it. And for some reason, the American greed make them change into monsters. They have no concern for people who are really, truly destitute. And that doesn't mean that they're all without education. Some of them are, but they've fallen on hard times, and all they need to do is have a lift or someone to support them to get them where they need to be. So to make a long story short, I had the trial, and the judge and my attorney really, really worked hard for me and just definitely just withdrew everything. After the actual trial, my lawyer pulled me aside and told me, it's time for you to leave this county. Your life is in jeopardy. You won your case, it's time for you to go. Get in your car and leave. Because if you stay and ever get sick, you will never come out of the hospital alive. That frightened me. So it was time for me to leave. My husband was already, ex-husband was already in the Tidewater area because he had a job. So once I left, I lost my business, my marriage, to divorce, and I lived in my car for 4 years, homeless. And even at that, they had me out as a fugitive. They were looking for me. So I couldn't understand why I couldn't find anyone to support or whatever. But today I can say that God was protecting me. To finally, when I found an old mobile home and I begged, the actual village to please let me have it because I needed to get off the street. I mean, no one knows what it is to be homeless until they definitely actually would have to be placed in that position. It's horrible. So lo and behold, I found the mobile home. I refurbished it because of my knowledge in construction. The next thing I knew, I was being brought up on charges of practicing medicine without a license. I was supposed to have gone in one of the hospitals in the local area, parading as a doctor, or, you know, and I'm like, wait a minute, well, what are they talking about? So once I was in court with my attorney, paid him a great deal of money, money that I had saved up trying to get myself back on my feet. He pled me guilty, and right then I fired him. And I told the judge, I want a continuance. In the meantime, they were placing me on probation for 2 years, and they were really trying to bring more and more charges, because the more charges they have brought, they could have me incarcerated. And my heavens, only heaven knows what would have happened to me if I was incarcerated, like the young lady down in Texas, leaving Chicago and going down to Texas with that situation that got totally out of hand and she ended up dead. And a lot of this is happening throughout our nation, but it never hits the news. So it's something that we need to do to start pulling together in various locations of our country to really come to a platform in order to bring out the truth. Because my story would actually make a movie, because every time I've tried to place it in the local media here, I get letters threatening that they are going to have me incarcerated. It's almost like I've come from a foreign entity and I'm like some kind of terrorist or some foreigner who doesn't have the right information in order to prove the fact that I'm here legitimately. And this has been going on for 20 years. I'm constantly being brought up on criminal charges. And at this point, I decided that I was, although I had studied law back in the 80s, thinking about becoming a civil rights attorney, although I stayed in civil rights regardless of what my profession, I was going to actually be educated within, I still had a pet treaty for civil rights. So now I'm in the federal court with my case on fraud of the court, mail fraud, defamation. And also I'm suing the newspaper company here who have sent me these certified letters threatening me for no reason. And that's further defamation, mail fraud, because why should I be brought up on charges for something I haven't done? See, it's sad to know that we're still living in a society with the plantation mentality. And it's sad to know that we have a lot of our own people supporting it. I have done all that I could to fight the situation, and I had to go outside of the Virginia area to New York, to Chicago, to Indianapolis, Indiana, various other places to ask people to really please help to support what I'm trying to do. I've gathered a lot of petitions to show evidence that the courts in Virginia or the minorities are just not doing the due diligence of giving them the right person and the right to petition and have a fair trial. And I'm not going to stop until I continue to acquire the rights and privileges back. I want them back. And everything they've taken from me, not because of being, to the point that I feel, you know, very neglected, or I feel that they've taken, no, it's not about material things, because I've given more than I've ever had. But I want it back so that I can do more to help educate people to know your rights, how you can learn how to become your own attorney in any court of law or in any civil matter. I know all about that. And these judges, they're playing games, but they realize that I've already filed charges against them, and in 2016, they're to come up for review, and several of them won't be actual judges anymore. But I can't fight this alone. I need support.
Dr. Vivian, let's pick up right on the other side of our break. We'll be right there.
Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
Okay, and we are back here at the Lotus Place with our special guest, Dr. Vivian Anderson, who was a contractor in Virginia, and she is sharing with us some of what she was able to see and experience being a contractor in terms of the housing discrimination. Before we come right back to you, Dr. Vivian, Aja brought this to my attention here in Houston for the past, what I think, the past seven years, we've had a mayor here, Mayor Anise Parker, and she's a lesbian mayor. She went somewhere and married her lover, and I think they adopted like one black child and all this, so they're doing the whole little LGBT thing or whatever you call it. But, anyway, so here in Houston, there's, oh my God, there's just this huge big fight about this equal rights bathroom privileges and all of this. But the thing about it is the law that they're trying to push here in Houston is to allow men, say for instance, if you're transgender, men to be able to go into the female restroom because you consider yourself a female. Now, see, I can see where the transgender people are coming from, but this is where you get all really crazy, because now we can have some man saying, yeah, I'm transgender. He just dressing up playing, and then he goes into the restroom and rape all the women and all the little girls.
Exactly.
And see, we just can't have all of that. So the wording, Aja, did you want to read the wording, or did you want me to read this?
Okay, let me read it. Hold on, let me put it up.
Okay. Because a group of, while you're pulling it up, a group of pastors came together, I remember, a few months ago, and they were trying to inform the community what this law is all about, because the way it sounds as if, oh, yes, we don't want black people to have to use the restroom in separate facilities or handicap or whatever. You know, it sounds all nice and beautiful, but it's tricky, and that's the whole point that we are going to share tonight, so that people will know how to vote on this. If you plan on voting on this, there's the mayoral election is coming up in Houston. But this is very important, because see, this could lead to some serious problems. This right here. So I think I am going to go up to that voting booth.
And for your children too.
Yes, I'm going to. If
children.
I just only check that, I'm checking on that one. Okay. So anyway,
I'm ready.
Can you share that with us?
Yes. Proposition 1, relating to the Houston Equal Rights Ordinance. That in itself kind of, you know, throws you off, because everybody wants equal rights. Okay?
Exactly.
Are you in favor of the Houston Equal Rights Ordinance, ordinance number 2014-530, which prohibits discrimination in city employment, in city services, city contracts, public accommodations, private employment, and housing based on an individual's sex, race, color, ethnicity, national origin, age, familial status, marital status, military status, religion, disability, and at the very end, sexual orientation genetic information, gender identity, pregnancy.
And then they say
so
pregnancy.
What else? Yes, pregnancy at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever you want to consider yourself as, it's mm-hmm. okay. You can just come right on in.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
the genetic information, sexual orientation, gender identity, those are tricky. Like Black Rose said, a man to put on lipstick and a wig and a dress and high heels. And even stocking.
To say his name.
I want to hear
from one of our legal experts, Brother Brown, because am I just tripping? Am I just going overboard with this? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, first of all, I want to say good evening to Dr. Anderson. You may not remember me because I've been away from the area of Hampton Roads for about 10 years. But I met you and Brother George Lutz's bookstore years ago.
Yes, I remember.
Aww. Okay. Yeah, I met you, Dr. Anderson, in Brother George's bookstore.
Yes.
Passing on. Yeah, it's been a while.
Small world.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
But on that note, I'm going to tell you what's going on. First of all, when they started passing these gay marriage bills and all of these other bills about them having equal rights affordable to them under the banner of civil rights, they piggybacked on what was human rights. In other words, we were fighting for civil rights under the constituency of human rights by us being mistreated based on our skin color and our ethnic values. So when they passed a civil rights bill in 1964 and they passed another one in 1968 prior to Johnson getting out of the White House, what happened was this emergence of this LGBT community decided that they would go back by them having members of their society in various government offices and places and push their agenda upon everybody. And that is what they're doing, and they're trying to make it legal. Because I noticed when Sister Asia read the last bit of that, it dealt with sexual orientation, something involving genetics. Okay, and what they're saying is that if I was born a woman and I'm now a man, then I should not be discriminated against in public accommodations. And that's how they get, that's the wording that they use. They're trying to cover up their hideous, degenerate lifestyle, okay, to make this incorporated with our struggle for humanity. And we know, those of us who are certain years of age, that we our focus was on just being treated as human beings. That's what our focus was on during the whole elements of the civil rights struggle. So now we have these people, like you said, the man is gay, she has a gay girlfriend, and she, or whatever they classify themselves to be, and she's adopting a kid, okay? They started out allowing them to adopt children and raise children in a society that is not progressive to nature. Nature has no gay dog and gay cat. Okay, and we're living above the elements of nature. And by these people switching words upon those who are really not in tune to what they're saying, it will have a detrimental effect on our children.
Uh-huh.
And it's very dangerous, because once these people can get these things in public accommodations, you know, they need to, what needs to be said to these people, what public accommodations are you talking about? At the next meeting they have, Sister Black Rose and Sister Asia, somebody should go there and say, when you say public accommodation, Are you talking about riding the buses, riding the trains, or going in the bathroom? Make them be
safe. They are, yes.
But
yes,
they've made it clear.
Yes.
They've made it clear.
They're talking about
it's just not even wording.
Yes. Yeah. See, it was a big fight that went on with this like a few months ago. And the pastors that were trying to enlighten, I can say some of the pastors here, they were trying to enlighten the community. And guess what happened, Brother Brown? She subpoenaed their sermons. She subpoenaed their sermons. Our mayor here.
Are you serious?
Yes. Yes. That's all this. Yeah, that's why this mayoral race is pretty much like a big deal now, because I think they're like four black men running. For the seat, for the position, Brother Brown. Yes. So, So this particular bill, although it sounds like equal rights and all of that for everyone, this also includes public facilities and private facilities. So any public or private facility, restroom. A man can put on a wig and shoot a heels or whatever lipstick. Put on a wig and say, instead of John, I'm Jane today. And then walk in the restroom
today.
And sit there all day and rape every damn body. So that's why I want transgender people to not be killed like they're killing transgender people. I don't want anybody to be killed like that. But I don't want to walk in the bathroom into a restroom when I'm out at the arena trying to go to a concert, and then I feel like I'm at goddamn it Katrina when they were in the Superdome and you got men and they're raping the children. No, absolutely not. So, Brother Brown, you know our guest, Dr. Vivian.
It's been a while since mm-hmm. I've seen Dr. Anderson. We talked for a long time. One time I met her at Brother George's bookstore, and I think I met you again through a guy named, used to be with the New Black Panther Party, a separate named Brother Jelani.
Yes.
Right, yeah. It's been a while. I left Norfolk 10 years ago, and I left the state of Virginia, and I decided I was never going to come back. But I'm very familiar with the Eastern Shore. As a matter of fact, I live on the Eastern Shore of Maryland, which is only about 20 minutes from the Eastern Shore of Virginia, right across the Virginia line. And I'm familiar with Accomack, Hoyntown, Templinsville, all of those little areas up in there where people are actually still living, where they have outdoor toilets, and the economics and all of the Eastern Shore is basically white. Even in the county that I live in, Somerset County that I live in, which is right across the Virginia line, is the poorest county in the state of Maryland. But we have the racial balance is 69.8% black. And the businesses are 99.8% white. And we're the only county that have a black college. We have a historical black college up here. But we have no black businesses. And we have no people that trying to promote or encourage or, you know, take no initiatives to get black businesses up here. And a friend of mine, we're getting ready to operate a print shop up here. To print t-shirts and stuff like that. And, you know, that's one of the businesses we're going to try to create right around the college because of the black school. But it's virtually like the Eastern Shore until I came here. This is just like a third world country.
Amen.
It's things that happen up here. And I'm telling you, because I've been here 10 years, it's things that happen on the Eastern Shore that don't happen nowhere else in the United States of America. But for instance, the kids, they have a high contamination of lead in these kids up here. And my wife did a health fair. This has been about 7 or 8 years ago. And I met this lady. The fair was at the university. And I met this lady from the state. and we were talking about lead contamination being one of the elements that was associative of ADHD. So I told her that because there was a high concentration of kids that was allegedly suffering from ADHD and attention deficit disorder, that I would, you know, go around and petition the churches and the people like that. And she was going to come down here free of charge now with state-funded money and test every kid in Somerset County for lead. Do you know these people would not agree to it? They were scared. They were actually scared.
Who was afraid? The people
that
didn't want to take the test?
Well, the parents were scared because they didn't want their kids tested. The pastors were scared because they said that they didn't want, because most of these churches on the Eastern Shore belong to the United Methodist denomination. Well, the United Methodist denomination is headed as a white organization. Okay, it's headed by white people. And these churches used to be American Methodist Episcopal Church. Okay, years ago, they were kind into thinking that if they joined forces with these white folks, that they would have a broader religious base. It was the biggest kind game that had ever been played upon these people's minds. And they are still sitting in these churches under John Wesley's system, believing that this is the best thing to happen. They're scared to be independent. I mean, I have no problem with the Bible because I don't believe in it. But if this is what you're going to do, why not do it on your own? Why do you have to be up under a slave master telling you when to build a church, when to go to church, who's to preach in your church? These are things, I mean, it's just like slavery to these people. And they love it. I was the first black person that was an intern with the state's attorney's office in Somerset County. And that gave me a rapport with the judicial and the legal system. And I have saved, by me being an advocate, that gave me a rapport with the state's attorney, which I have saved a lot of people's children from being incarcerated, helping a lot of them get out of trouble. And that mm-hmm. gave me a rapport with Wicomico County, which is Salisbury, Maryland. And that's how I, you know, utilize my organization by doing things like that. So when anything happens, I get calls from police chiefs and state's attorneys. And, you know, I'm able to go in there, sit down with them, and sometimes negotiate things to help these kids come out of situation. But I'm one of the few because, number one, I have no fear. And number two, I don't accept myself as being a slave. So they kind of didn't know how to take me coming from another area. And a lot of them thought, well, maybe he came from New York and he's very radical. Maybe he came from Baltimore. When they found out I came from Norfolk, Virginia, they were astonished because a lot of people here think Norfolk, Virginia is, you know, a little rural country town. And, you know, but to make a long story short, it's fervor, it's a mentality that people, if you've never been here, you wouldn't understand the Eastern Shore unless you came here. You might not have to live here. I mean, my wife said when she first went to college here about 30 years ago, she's been here that long. She said when she first went to college, she said it was told to them by the officials at the school, do not let the street lights catch you outside of the campus. Because what they did, then the Ku Klux Klan used to have open meetings on Fridays in the town square.
In the 80s.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
You still need to scatter by dark.
Let me
bring Dr. Vivian back in, Brother Brown, because
I want to make
a quick comment, please. Oh, sure. And you know what? Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, please.
Okay. I just wanted to acknowledge the doctor for her courage and her strength and her commitment to justice for these people who have been forgotten or many of us don't even know anything about. I'm just trying to figure out where is this place and it's just more than sad to hear that these people are not getting the help they need, and there's so few people like yourself who are trying to do anything about it, and so many people who are against you. And I just wanted to commend you, because it's very dangerous, you know, the work that you're doing. And I just applaud you. And I also wanted to say about the people you were speaking of, Brother Brown, like these people that the doctor has been around, I wouldn't go so far as to say that they love it, you know, the conditions that they're in, and that they don't do anything about it. It's just, they don't know. I mean, generation after generation after generation, it's somewhat right. to compare to being on the plantation. You know, right. there were a few Brother Brown, there were a few Black Roses, and there were a few doctors that were on those plantations, but they were few and far between. Most of those people, they just took it. A few, Harriet Tubman, you know.
Well, you know Harriet Tubman.
A lot of they didn't love it, though. They didn't know what to do.
Harriet Tubman comes from. I'm working in the county right now where Harriet Tubman comes from. I'm painting a house. Now, I can paint two houses in Dorchester County right up in Cambridge. And Harriet Tubman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, her,
wow.
You know, she
Ooh, you could feel a spirit.
Right. You can feel the spiritual power. And, wow. You know, that's where they had a big ride in Cambridge years ago. I want to say 1968.
Ooh.
It was either 68 or 69. And, they didn't want to integrate the public schools in Cambridge. So Rap Brown came in. He held a rally. And it was alleged that he assisted in burning down half of Cambridge. Half of Cambridge was burned down. They never could figure out who burned down. There was a lady by the name, you can Google her. Her name is Gloria Richardson. I've been trying to contact her ever since I've been on the Eastern Shore. But I think she now lives in upstate New York. She's about 82 years old. But she was very smart. She participated in the 63 Civil Rights March on Washington. As a matter of fact, she did a clip for Democracy Now, when they had the commemoration 2 years ago. Of the March on Washington. She was the one that Amy Goldman interviewed. Gloria Richardson. But she came from Cambridge. She came from Cambridge. And Cambridge has a black mayor. And, you know, they have a few black officials. They got a black judge. And, you know, but the bottom line is that the Eastern Shore atmosphere of the people is that the majority of the money in the businesses are ran by Caucasians. There's a big crabby, and this is one of the largest crabby industries in the country.
Uh-huh.
A place called Crisfield. Yeah. And, you know, when the Hurricane Sandy came through here, which destroyed my house also, it destroyed half of Crisfield. Well, before they built them black people houses up, they stole the money. And they built this dock because they had these big festivals down there on the dock. These crab eating festivals, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the political problem for the Eastern Shore. and these shag roses and things like that. But these people, man, I'm telling you, I'm trying
to...
Well,
let me bring the doctor back in, Brother Brown, before she has to leave, because we only have about 30 minutes. Thank you so much, Brother Brown, because that's why I really wanted you to join us tonight, because I know you're on that side of the country that she's speaking of, and you can attest to some of the atrocities taking place in terms of...
I met Dr. Anderson. A friend of mine used to own a bookstore in Lover. He passed away in the sea. Well, he passed on Lover. But that's when I met her, and he introduced me to Dr. Anderson.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Dr. Anderson.
Yes.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much for being patient. And reading some of the information that you sent, now, I know that you said when you and your husband both were contractors, and so how were you able to first identify some of these housing discrimination practices and inside the home? Talk about the video, when you and your husband video, what did you see?
Well, I went out to, once I was elected the chairman of the board under federal protective activity for the state agency that was supposed to monitor these programs to make sure that the allocated funds were being allocated appropriately. However, it makes me believe that the state officials who were supposed to intercede in making sure the money was dispersed appropriately, I believe seriously that they had a great deal to do with the misappropriations. I was a whistleblower. And by law, the United States have laws to protect whistleblowers as far as reporting fraud and misappropriation.
But more whistleblowers have been jailed under President Obama's administration than anybody, which I find quite ironic. And disturbing.
This is true.
And disturbing.
This is true.
And disturbing.
This is true.
And he campaigned on fairness and transparency. And when the whistleblowers are calling for transparency, clarity, they're exposing wrongs. And so why are they being arrested and jailed?
They're hunted down like terrorists.
Yes.
Like that Snowden guy.
Come out of the darn embassy. I mean, all this craziness, it makes no sense. Because people are trying to tell you the truth. Okay, I just have to share that and inject it. Go ahead on, Ms. Dr. Vivian.
Well, you know, it's so sad that the people that I was really fighting for, they have died. They died prematurely, leaving their heirs without redress of right to life, liberty, and property. And their heirs have not been awarded, just like this Martinsville 7. Something has to be done to awaken those who are in the position to carry out their actual job description appropriately. These officials, these politicians, because right now, not long ago, the Department of Justice in 2006 won a huge lawsuit here against the Chesapeake Police Department for discrimination of people of color. And last year, that same police department violated a Caucasian woman here in our area, in Chesapeake, severely. And they took her into custody and said that she abused the officers. Now, how in the world can a 5'4" little white lady going to take 6 feet police officers with the S and abuse them? They took and slammed her on the floor, picked her up by the cuffs and slammed against the wall and took her into custody. But what was so ironic is once they got her there and they did an investigation, they found out the cameras on the officers proved otherwise, that she was abused. So what happened was she had her actual story placed on the front cover of the Virginia Pilot Ledger Star. And all the local media, TV stations, aired her story. And she was actually awarded. She filed a lawsuit in the federal court downtown Norfolk for $500,000. And she was able to acquire that actual money, an out-of-court settlement, of course. And
of
the
course.
City attorney...
Let's pick back up, Dr. Vivian, I hate to interrupt you. Let's just pick back up right here on the other side of the break. This is our last break, and then you can continue your story. Thank you so much. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
This is Brother Elliot, host of Time for an Awakening, and you're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennium.
Back talking about housing discrimination, and Dr. Vivian Anderson is with us, and she resides on Virginia, right? The Virginia area. And Dr. Anderson, now we want to hear some of the things that you were able to see and witness, some of the communication from some of the victims of this housing discrimination, like when you and your husband went to the home to video.
Yes.
On the record. What did you see? Like, what was most appalling to you and most incredulous to you?
I was going to come to that part with just bringing out some clarity about some of the issues that are being actually exposed. But with what I had exposed, they didn't want that to be known. I mean, I saw people in homes without the roofs, without doors, without windows, no bath facility. I mean, basically nothing. It was horrible.
Yeah, here.
And if you saw the video, you would understand what I'm talking about. And I mean, it hurt my heart to even go home to my own home after seeing what those people are living in. So what we did, we took a lot of our money and we actually tried to help as much as we could as far as giving hot water tanks and doing what we could do until possibly we could find the necessary help from the actual state. And what's so sad about it, these individuals, they had the information. I sent them a package of everything that I had documented. I had written, I had testimonies from the actual clients. I had news articles. They had it all. And I got so angry and upset that I went up to Richmond and I burst into the United States Department of Agriculture and I told that director, I told him, I said, now you're going to call the police. You can do whatever you please. But I'm telling you now, if you don't get down in that county, knowing that you have all this money here in this organization, I guarantee you by the end of the week, you will not have your job. Because I've called Washington and I've told them the problem and they told me to address it to you. You have the DVD, I mean the video, and I'm sure you've seen it, but you have been trying to avoid me. So I took a ride up here to find out, were you still alive or something, whatever. You could at least call me. But finally, he came down at a meeting. I had over 200 people and the Nation of Islam there to actually monitor the actual armory. And that man left in tears. He said, Dr. Anderson, I have never seen anything like this. I said, now, do you think I would waste my time sending you the video? Did you actually see the video? He was so busy, he didn't even see it. But he came down, and they had a story, which I have the articles. I have everything to back it up because, in fact, I'm writing a story about this entire situation. Plus, I've been praying and asking God, Lord, what can I do? What can I do to get this more out? So if I'm being barred from the actual media here locally, then what I'm going to do is write a book. And then I'm going to have a book signing. And I'm going to have people purchasing the book. That's the best way for me to get it out. And each person who purchased the book will have a DVD. Because it's just sad that we have those in position, minorities, they won't do a thing. They have seen the evidence. I have made sure that they've seen it. And all they do is suppress, cover up, isolate, censor, as if I'm some terrorist. I'm serious. And the only reason I'm not in prison is because every time they come after me or violate any right that I know of, I file lawsuits, whether the judge throw it out or whatever, I file it. And just like now, when I file my case, the lawyers and the judge, head judge in Chesapeake, dismissed my case with prejudice without even allowing me access to the court. I appealed it to the Virginia Supreme Court, denied. I asked for a motion to rehear. Deny all evidence to show. Then I went as far as actually appealing it to the United States, the Supreme Court, and they accepted my writ of certiorari. And I mean, that's a dissertation for a doctorate. And that was accepted. And once I submitted it, here they come back after explaining the fact of all the true evidence, everything, they denied it. I asked for a motion to rehear evidence about how that they had left those people in a posture that their heirs now, since they died, have no rights to redress or right because no one is fighting for them. They denied that.
So well, you know, like, there's an area in Arkansas, and it's Georgia Pacific, which is owned by the Koch brothers. Dump their waste from the trains. I think I forgot what type of waste it is, but whatever, it's waste. They dump it in this river, which is the main water system for some people in this particular community in Arkansas. And the street that runs parallel to the river, they call that street now Cancer Street or something like that, because everybody on the street either has died from cancer, like respiratory cancer or respiratory breathing problems or something like that, or they're on a respirator.
Oh, my God.
So this is happening all around. These people know exactly what they're doing. They know it's just psychotropic drugs are in the water system. Fluoride is in the water system, and they know what fluoride does.
Exactly. It has been all the time.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The serious thing is, we have to understand and that the fact is, when we see no and we read, because I read a lot, because of being a published author, I read and research a lot. We have the Illuminati, and they are real. They feel that 85% of the world population should be decreased to a percentage where they feel that they can control. So there's a lot going on in our society. And we as a people, we are the government. We have the voices. We're the ones who vote them in. And we are the ones who are responsible to go to them and make sure that they're doing their job. Or if they're not, replace them. I mean, get them out of there, because it's a disgrace for them to go home and annually they receive a six-figure income, and they allow people who they're responsible for is allocating the necessary funding to assist them with appropriate housing and living conditions, and they have no conscience as to whether they live or die. And that is a
none whatsoever.
And it's pathetic. And that's why I can understand what the sister, after she actually acquired the award, and she basically repeated what's in my heart. It's just like with Dr. Martin Luther King saying, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And with Harriet Tubman, I repeat hers quote, in my mind, I see line, and over that line, I see green fields and lovely flowers and beautiful white women with their arms stretched out to me over that line. But I can't somehow seem to get there, no how. I can't seem to get there to that line. Meaning that she reaching out, doing everything that she did, and helping hundreds or thousands of our people to freedom. Here we are in this society today. We have regressed. We're sitting back waiting, I guess, to exhale or whatever, because none of us, the NAACP, the SCLC, the NAN, and other organizations, I've gone to all of them. All they have done is just defame my character. They just destroy those who are trying to do something or make a difference. That doesn't bother me. I could care less. Something is going to be done, and as long as I can appeal my case now in the appeals court in Virginia, somebody's going to listen, because I'm going to cry out as loud as I can, as many places as I can, until something is done about the injustices we have, not only in Virginia, but across this nation. And it is a disgrace and a crime. How in the world can we send people in responsible position to other countries, give them billions of dollars, and we have right here in our own nations people that are being neglected and ignored and left to die? That's a disgrace.
That is. It really is. It really
is. No one wants to do anything or say anything. You're only attempting to expose something that is very harmful and deleterious to a certain population, but these people just this is a part of their plan to kill and destroy certain populations that they deem undesirable. So, it's
you know, one thing I do know, I live 2 miles up from the main road back in the woods in Calton on 6 acres up near the mountain. They told me that if I ever come out, I should wear orange. And if I didn't, I could be shot as a deer, because they do a lot of shooting, hunting up in that area. And I can say, for the time that I walked that highway, that road, every day for exercise, and never did I wear orange. And I'm still here, because I serve higher power. And he said in his word, blessed is he who considers the poor. The Lord will deliver him in the time of trouble. The Lord will keep him alive. And if he's on a bed of affliction, the Lord will lift him up. God left the poor in Tulsa that they will be with us always. But if we have the right of the position to do something about it, no matter what it is, giving them bread, giving them food, doing whatever we can, that's a blessing. That's a difference of something they have never had or even been treated with any type of hands to reach out to them. And most of them, it's sad to say, they don't know what to do. And that's why even today, no matter how educated we are, we need to know our rights. And we need to understand that we are the government, not them. They shouldn't be dictating to us. We should be bringing the issues before them.
You know about that?
About the situation.
Absolutely. We're waiting on them to
if we're thinking that these people are going to speak for us, their interests are completely different from our interests. And I think that that's where a lot of people get confused. Dr. Vivian, how can people reach out to you if they want to have you to come out to speak to their organization or group or something and share information about your book also?
Yes. A few months ago, I always have, and this may be hard to believe, but it's true. When you have a close relationship with God, and I mean, you really, truly pray and agonize and fast and pray because He's real, He always brings a voice to me whenever it is that I've written a book. And 2 months ago, I was getting up and I heard the voice, "In your own words. In your own words," twice. And I'm like, "In my own words?" And then I realized that's a book. So I began that book, and I'm just about finished that book. And I also write articles in the New Journal on God, the 115-year-old minority newspaper here is the one that I use to publicize my articles, and it goes across America for those who take the actual subscription. And I have gotten a lot of support. Even Caucasian have supported, not only that with my petitions, because a lot of them feel truly that there is a problem, because many of them in the county even came to me after they found out who I was on TV in the newspaper to bring me issues that they felt that somebody needed to address. So I placed it on the video. I got the information out there. And today, these people are afraid of me. I mean, up in Danville and out in those air counties, they are definitely afraid of the fact that I know what I know, and they don't. This is why they're suppressing to keep from getting the information out there. This is why I'm getting letters from the newspaper company. I'm being told that I'm placed on a do not call list at the TV station, the same station that nominated me for the Jefferson Award, which is Channel 10 in our area. I mean, I'm like, what in the world is going on? If you can publicize Ms. Davenport's incident of how she was roughed up by the police, I was violated by the Danville and the Chesapeake police, calling them, telling them I'm trying to murder people and I'm being brought up on attempt murder. And not only that, to get that about murder, after the county, they took the Nation of Islam. They murdered one of their wives by hire in her business with her two small children there. And 2 years later, took her husband and the minister and incarcerated them on a capital murder.
Whoa.
When did this happen?
Again.
When did this happen?
I'm sorry?
When did this happen? This murder for hire?
Once I had to flee for my life, they were coming after me. They didn't know where I was because I was homeless. They took the Nation of Islam study group, which is located in Martinsville, Virginia, who came out to support me, a group of a large organization. They took them. They were after the minister and the his head FOI. And I have a news article to show how they were supporting me along with the state police when we were rallying down the street, showing the plea gates of the fact that there was money in that county that could be utilized to build those homes. That once I left, they had a drug dealer to murder the FOI's wife in her business with her small children there. He came back and found her in a pool of blood. She kept calling her, and he couldn't reach her, so he got to there. He was panicked, and he contacted the minister. And when the minister got there, he said, "Listen, we got to call 911. Once he called 911, and they had a big trial about it, and they tried everything they could to tie them into the situation, but they realized it was a drug dealer and found out that the sheriff's department was distributing of drugs and prostitutes. They were actually caught by the FBI. And one of those drug dealers was a bribe to go into court to say the minister paid him $10,000 to murder his FOI's wife. And that right there doesn't even sound right. And they, 2 years after, put them in, incarcerated them in prison for capital murder, as they were trying to have me incarcerated. But each time they tried it, I filed a lawsuit, and that's when they backed up. They realized I knew the law better than them. And right now, I pray to God my case in federal court, which is in appeal, and also the state court with the Virginia Poly Legistar. I'm going to bring this out regardless. I'm praying and fasting and saying, Lord, please help me. This is for these people. They have been neglected. They're still being neglected. Millions of dollars are being misused, and people are left to suffer. They don't want to be in that position. All they want is an opportunity and a chance. I live with them. I lived in the area. They just want someone to care enough. And then they had elderly people living in their homes, and the unqualified workers would go there from the agency, make the matters worse, and they would have to move out of their home, and then they end up confiscating their property and their land.
Yes, that's a big scam. That happens to so many people. I've seen it happen to a lot of, I heard about that happen to a lot of elderly people.
All the time.
Well, Dr. Vivian, we're at the end of the show. Maybe we can have you come back and share some more and talk to us more about your book also. So if people want to reach out to you, they can email you or call you.
Yes, I'll give you an email, and please, if you can find anyone else out there who may have a voice or could support, I'm doing this for the people, not only for myself. I'm going to stand my ground and fight in court. But you can contact me at Vivian, my first name, V-I-V-I-A-N, D as in David, E as in Edward, R as in Ray, 62@yahoo.com. Again, Vivian, my first name, D as in David, E as in Edward, R as in Ray, 62@yahoo.com, or 757-289-9955. Help me to get this out there, because I believe strongly once this is actually exposed, more help will come.
Well, we sure thank you so much for taking the time. Does anyone have a question or a comment for Dr. Vivian before she leaves us? Brother Brown, I believe Delta's still there with us.
I wanted to ask you, Dr. Anderson, do you currently have a lawyer that's sort of available to you, one that you fully trust? And also, are you like alone? Do you have someone that accompanies you when you're out, or you just mostly out alone?
Well, it's gotten to the point now that, for example, one of the actual police officers from Danville contacted me and told me that they were going to try to bring me up on charges of harassing and have me brought back to Danville. And I said, well, I think my Black Panthers brothers need to know about this. And all of a sudden, he wanted to change. And I told him to have a good day. I called the Black Panthers, and they called them and let them know, if you think you're coming down to bother Dr. Anderson, that means we're coming too. And he had the recording, and the man asked him, what do you all want to come up here and rally? He said, you all rally every March, the Ku Klux Klan, so why not? And I never heard from him again. So, in other words, I'm not afraid. The protection I have is the covering of God, and I'm not being stupid. I don't have the fear, because once the white men know that you're afraid, then they have conquered. But when they see you and you're out here, you're gathering support petitions, or you're writing letters, you're writing articles in the paper, you're filing cases, what can they do? And these cases are strong cases. I just want the support to help me get it actually exposed, because the local media here, they have gotten the word to censor me. Don't let her come and actually, you know, place a story in. And this is why I'm getting these letters. And they think that I can't follow suit. Oh, yes, I can. I know the law.
What have you been able to do to date and so forth, making some kind of strides with improving the conditions for those people?
I wrote a story in the New Zealand Guide. I have taken flyers out, passing around along with the DVDs, and they got me in touch with the Moorish Americans. They have gotten me in touch with various organizations that are really trying to search out to see how they can help to get this information out there to be exposed. I just need an outlet just to get it exposed. And once it gets exposed, a lot of political people are going to be named in this because I know who they are. One of them is the mayor of Danville. He used to be the executive director who took the money year after year since 65 and misused that money for more, because there is no way that county should have been actually displaced the way that it was, to have these people living like they're on a plantation without any modern anything, electricity, heating, water. It's horrible. It's horrible.
Well, thank you so much, Ms. Vivian. We're going to close out tonight, and we thank you for your bravery and continuing the fight to expose this type of discrimination, because
that's what you do.
Don't know what's really going on.
Well, one more thing before I go. Yes. The Secretary mm-hmm. of Commerce and Trade, the FBI, are supposed to get involved when there is serious violations of civil rights or constitutional rights. I have flooded them with stories. I have flooded them with the petition. All they do is continue to suppress, because they think I'm out here by myself. They just say, don't pay her no mind, or try to defame my character. I need support. I need people to pull with me.
Hear your story.
Send me information. If you send me your email, I will actually forward you some of the information and the petitions. Maybe you can keep forwarding out to someone else that I don't know. Just try to get some help to make sure that this doesn't happen again. And I'm not saying that it's isolated just here in Virginia. It's all over the country. But nobody's doing anything about it.
Well, you are, and you're trying to do something. And if all of us just put in some type of effort and try to do something, so at least you can say you tried. Because nothing beats a failure but a try. So, thankfully that you have been protected, and we pray that you continue to be protected. Let me see, Brother Brown, you still there with us? Uh-oh, Brother Brown. Maybe he's on mute. Well, Dr. Vivian, thank you so very much, and I will be in touch with you very soon, okay? And I really appreciate you.
Thank you, and thank you for having me on. Thank you so much for the guest.
Thank you for sharing this with us. Thank you so much. It's incredible to hear something like that.
Yes, God bless you all, and I pray to hear from you again. Have a wonderful evening.
You too. Bye-bye. And so that was Dr. Vivian Anderson, and you can reach out to her. Let's see, Dr. Anderson, did she leave her email? Because I have her information, but I'm not sure which email she left for us. But you can play this show again, which you should, to listen to some of her story, exposing the tales and discrimination and what has been going on. Aja, when she mentioned that about the non-roofs and the outdoor plumbing. Well, you know, a lot of that was going on right there in Mississippi along the border, right before the casinos came in.
So oh, yeah. Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Especially like cold water. I remember cold water, Mississippi before.
Yeah.
It was, went under reconstruction and all. Cold water, Mississippi. Yeah. It was another county that was like one of the poorest counties there. Sugar water, something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that sugar water? They didn't have any running water
It was like they were living in another time zone altogether.
And a whole nother time zone. It was horrible. And so when the casinos in Tunica began to come into that area, they paid a lot of those poor farmers like $1 million, bought their land, and hey, look, they're making multi-millions. But thank you, everyone. Thank you so much, Aja. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Brown. Thank you, Delta. And peace and good night. And thank you so much, Dottie. Everyone, have a wonderful night.
Namaste.